The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Guest's bio starts with born of revolutionaries. Isn't that amazing? It's like, it's literally like those three words, like sounds like the beginning of an amazing adventure, of a beautiful book that you're going to read that's going to be exciting and have you gripped right to the last pages. Born of revolutionaries, it just knows that something amazing and beautiful is going to come out of that. Maya was born in Gaborone, Botswana, to a Mosotho mother and a South African father who were in exile. So clearly he was probably an ANC fighter fighting apartheid. And you know, a lot of them had to go into exile. And he's probably one of them. Anyway, she moved to Bulawayo in Zimbabwe in December 2014, and she is renowned in the spoken word movement in Botswana. So probably those revolutionary genes. Do you want to know more? You have to hold on just a little bit longer. Let's find out what's happening during the week on Africa Global. Maya, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking the time to join us. What have you been up to since we tried to connect the last time?
Mothering as usual. Baby is now 6 months and teething. I've started the second album. We're doing the vocals and music planet. And yeah, the economy's opened up in Botswana. So there's just sort of a thing we do, but just basically in home. I was in confinement when we tried to take the time, and now I can go outside, you know, look pretty, you know. Be the goddess in Maung, as Anthony puts it.
Yes, be the goddess in Maung. Excellent. Okay. And so you said you're recording your second album, the vocals for your second album?
Yes, we are in pre-production. So I am writing the songs and then I'm sending them through to my technical director for him to get the band, and then they set the music on before we go into the studio.
Okay. I get it. And on average, how long will it take for you to, does it take for you to produce an album?
With Warrior, it took 6 months. We started in June last year and we were done by October, and then we launched it on the end of November. Mm-hmm. With this one, it's called The Lover.
Okay.
Because, you know, after war, we need to make some love. We need to, you know, lick our wounds and find new creation.
Yes.
I think this one's going to take a bit longer, given, you know, there's new baby now, and there's just adjustments of, I live 1,000 kilometers away from studio.
Oh, wow.
So it takes a bit of traveling. Yeah.
Where
I live 10 hours drive away.
Where is the studio?
Sorry?
Where is the studio?
The studio is in Gaborone, and I am in Maung.
Okay. And yeah. It's 1,000 kilometers.
It is 1,000 kilometers, 10 hours drive, 10, 11 hours on a bus, basically.
But I mean, at some time you have to go to Gaborone, don't you, to be in the studio?
Yes, band. That's the plan. Hopefully in November, December, I'll spend a few days in studio.
Uh-huh.
And the fun part is I have such an amazing team. So I just need to get into studio, sing my bit, and then come back home and
Okay.
I know in a month or two they'll send it and the songs will be out and you'll be playing them on the show. So,
excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
We look forward to that. Okay, so before
we
get into your craft, as you know on this show, each time we ask the guests to bring us something that they're reading, you know, talk a little bit about what they're reading. And I see you've chosen The Spirit of Intimacy, Ancient African Teachings. Yes? Yes, I was saying the Spirit of Intimacy, Ancient African Teachings in the Ways of Relationships.
Yeah. We need to go back to loving and knowing it. There's this conception that, you know, Africans are not intimate or passionate. There's no public displays of affection. So my friend was like, no, I'm reading this book. And I'm like, no, send it through, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm such a love munchkin. I'm looking for love. So it's good to have skills. Just so you can keep a man. You know, they're saying we're too independent these days. We don't know how to keep a man.
Yeah, but men also need to think about how to keep a woman instead of running away.
Amen, right?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, and the interesting thing that you're talking about, you know, intimacy and stuff like that, you also see it a lot in Western movies where usually relationships between black men and black women are never portrayed in a positive light. It's only recently now that you're seeing positive relationships between black people, you know, in Hollywood and Western and shows.
But yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. And so ancient African teachings in the ways of relationships. This, I read a review, Alice Walker, the author of The Color Purple, she wrote, this is a teacher who can help us put together so many things that our modern Western world has broken.
Yeah, because it's true. It's true.
How well do you think women would fare in this when we talk about ancient African teachings? Like, have you read the book completely?
I'm not yet done with it. I'm reading it chapter by chapter, so I'm at the 8th chapter.
So what
you read so far? Uh-huh. I feel, Alba, that everybody has given a woman a voice, you know? Mm-hmm. A woman must do this, a woman must do that. This gives us as women, beyond our role of carrying children and teaching and, you know, giving birth and lying on our back and cooking barefoot in the kitchen, it gives us the voice and the platform as the microphone, as the holder mm-hmm. of intimacy. It gives us our power back. It allows us and teaches the people close to us for them to understand that we know what we are and we are the core of pleasure. Mm-hmm. And if there wasn't so much expectation, and you know how if you go out and you try and read so much about the role of a woman, there's a doctor guy, I forgot his name, he's got YouTube videos about queening, about queenology, about queen consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he's coming from a good place by telling us what a queen needs to know and how a king must find his position next to a queen. Mm-hmm. But it would be nice if more women were out there talking about it without being put into the feminist box. It would be nice if women were out there teaching men and men not having that misogynistic idea of, no, I am man, I am caveman, so I know what I'm doing, lie on your back, you know, get on top, you know, bend over. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
This gives us our power back and it has that gentle teaching welcoming voice that is very educating and enlightening. It's friendly. I tried to read it with a recent ex of mine and I think he just got intimidated and just thought, but why should we read about intimacy? Like, I got this, you know?
Yeah.
And it's sad because I want it so that when we become intimate, it's a language that we already share in the same frequency and there's no pressure and awkwardness when we are intimate because then we've got the root source of it. I don't know if I'm making sense,
It makes sense. And I think, for instance, it would be very easy to convince a lot of women I think the way that maybe men, particularly African men, need to be approached on this is for them to understand that it doesn't take anything away from them. It in fact gives something to for them, because I think there's also at the back of a vast majority of men's minds is that women are for them to take. It's a power play thing, and that if you now want to go into understanding intimacy with your partner, I think then there's an awful lot of men who would think that something is being taken away from them, that it's some form of them being emasculated.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And it all starts with talking.
Mm-hmm.
It all starts with talking and talking about our bare naked souls, literally, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you read us a little something from it?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Okay, I found the part.
Like
a couple's intimate... Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, it reads, a couple's intimacy is not about the pursuit of pleasure. It is the pursuit of a kind of power that only spirit can give in a sacred context. It's not going to be found on a public road or in a village circle. It's going to be in the ash circle, in a place turned into a shrine, an altar, a sacred space. By creating a sacred space, we open ourselves to other spirits and we give ourselves permission to completely open up to another. We allow ourselves to be our true self and to be fully present. The couple in a sacred place is there because they have first admitted that they don't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They move themselves into that place in order to enable spirit to come and be their teachers. If you try to aim at pleasure only, intimacy will be short. You will get finished with it in a short time. And it can look, if you can look at intimacy as spirit driven and go beyond the limitation of pleasure, then intimacy can have a long lasting effect. It can be life giving and healing. You see, Black people invented tantric sex. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you see how it's saying, we need to connect. I need to look at you and feel safe because you need to be as vulnerable as how I'm feeling. There doesn't need to have that pressure, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not about sex. It is about two souls tying together to connect, so that in every other department besides their physical, there's a tie there, there's a bond, there's something that is set in stone, you know?
Yeah. While you were reading, I don't know what like the religious makeup in Botswana is, but you know, Ghana is, according to statistics, 70% of Ghanaians say they are Christians. And as you were reading, I was trying to balance how this works in a society that is incredibly religious. The religiosity here is very high, and you're talking the difference between being religious and being spiritual. I don't know how well those two work together in our society. I mean, what is it like in, I don't know, did I make myself clear? Hello? Maya?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm here.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So
in Botswana, it's exactly the same, hey? It's exactly the same, if not more. I mean, I was watching national television and there's a month of prayer and it's all going to the Christian religion. It's not making allowance for any other, you know, faith to also have an hour or two or 10 minutes or 5 minutes of praying against HIV and COVID-19. And people respect religion more than spirit, because religion has rules. And people follow rules, and they think that if they can follow these rules, then spirit can be connected easily without stress, without effort, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just the thing that if I go to church on Sunday, then I'm cool, you know? If I, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
The Christian religion is very strong in this. It is very, like, to the highest, it is absolutely the dominant religion.
Yes, here too. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's like...
So when we talk about issues of intimacy, they try and make it a societal thing when they're talking in the spirit of love and eradicating, you know, GBV and sexism and all such things and chauvinism and stuff like that. So they try and not put it as the book is putting it, but it's there. There's dialogue. And there's, you know, the few people that are trying to get it out, they say, let's connect, because in like this, then it gets rid of the lust and it gets rid of the hunger and the misbehaving of the human kind. Yeah,
exactly. Which I think leads us nicely into the third song on the playlist, which is Love Doctor. Can you tell us a little about what inspired Love Doctor?
Girl, love makes me sick in such a good way.
Okay.
I am a lovesick puppy. I am a romantic. I live for love. I'm like Elizabeth Taylor, girl. I'm out here trying to be in love all the time.
Oh, really?
Even when my heart is broken. Yes, even when my heart is broken, I'm like, right, next. I know I'm still alive, and God trust me, there must be someone out there for me. We wrote Love Doctor.
You wrote Love Doctor.
Yeah, so we wrote Love Doctor for people that are feeling the way I'm feeling, that like I'm sick in my soul.
Who is the we? You and your partner or what?
Oh, I wish. No, me and my team, Lex. Okay. Lex and Colin. Yes, Colin is my awesome backup vocalist, amazing photographer, and also my creative director. So,
okay.
We write the songs together, and we wrote Love Doctor because he was like, you, sister, you resonate love. I don't know why these guys don't get it. And I was like, I don't know why. But we wrote Love Doctor for people that, you know, can't just find themselves constantly looking for love and enjoying love. And, you know, you're a different person when you're in love. You know? And everybody has a love doctor out there.
Yes, you're more vulnerable, and you know, and if you're with somebody that makes you feel safe, it's a good place to be. It's a really good place.
It is. Yes, you feel calm and complete.
Yeah,
you feel like everything else can function once your heart health is healthy.
But it seems more and more it's kind of difficult to find that person, you know, and I don't understand that.
Because we are not reading enough books, like, out of it.
We're not reading enough books, yeah.
We're not reading. We're not educating ourselves.
Yes, and then...
We're social mediaing.
Yes, and then, you know, acting, as you said, reading, getting all this knowledge, and then acting upon it, you know, actually, not just reading, but reading it and taking it on board, you know, wearing that coat as part of our lives. Okay, let's listen to Love Doctor, and then when we come back, we are going to get into the conversation proper.
Cool.
Been some time, been watching you fly. Every time you catch my eye, heart go boom, boom, triple in time, and I'm looking hella fine. Now you
better realize,
you just gotta know me,
know what to be my mind.
Take it easy,
slow wine,
let the music free you,
let the music free you.
Slow down.
Wow, I love the Love Doctor. That is really beautiful. I love the texture of your and the tone of your voice. It's very nice.
Thank you. It's a vibe.
No, it really, really is. And it's like, and the fact that it's different from sort of the usual run-of-the-mill music that we get to hear. Okay, so your bio starts with Born of Revolutionaries. For me, those three words sound like the beginning of a very good book.
I'm a book. I am a book myself.
So tell us a bit about your life growing up. And you sound like, you had revolutionary parents. Talk a little about them and how they've impacted your artistic journey, like the kind of life you've led.
Well, my dad was exiled from South Africa, and my mom was exiled from Lesotho, and they met here. And, you know, there are people born in you know, 1940s, 50s. So, I mean, that by the time they came here, it was 1970s. It was the height of, you know, the youth uprising and a lot of governments switching up into independence or having maybe 10 years in independence and having to adjust to it. And, I think, well, for my mom, her first husband was Ntate Letsie. So he is somehow connected to the royalty. Mm-hmm. You know, Moshoeshoe was the king back in the 1800s. Uh-huh. And back then, you know, Konka, you know, they had loads and loads of kids. So my mom's first husband is the descendant from Moshoeshoe. I think it was his grandfather, and you know, the political turmoil in Lesotho wasn't safe enough, so they had to run away and came to Botswana, whereas my father was also, I think, by that time in his mid-20s, mm-hmm. maybe, yeah, 70s, and he also had to switch up his name. In Botswana in the 80s and late 70s, there was letter bombing. They would target South Africans by sending them a letter. And when you open the letter, there's a bombing. So they had to hide most of their early years in the country. And not knowing that, because by the time we were born in 83, 1980, 1980, you know, whenever my siblings were born, mm-hmm. we came into when things were settling down and apartheid was ending. So I grew up pretty privileged, but I did see the up and down, having to go to Lesotho for school holidays, learning the rustic life, going to the compound up in the mountains, knowing, you know, the history of royalty, mm-hmm. and just learning the fear and learning racism, as harsh as it is. I'm with my baby.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. We can continue.
Learning the history of harsh racism, having to hide still in wardrobes, and, you know, stories of how they would hide in between mattresses, and it's really horrible.
Yes.
So to me, for my parents to give me the privileged life that I had, going from what they went through, they are revolutionary, and for them to continue to be still alive and see us and me and my siblings continuing their name and raising up the flag and not powering down, maintaining our identity, mm-hmm. is something that I would say I am born of legends. You know?
Yeah. You have, there have been several, like, you're an arts activist, you're a vocalist. Which of your arts, how would you describe yourself?
God speaks to me through music. God saves my life through music. I've been through so much, mm-hmm. and every time I fall, the only thing that gets me back up is music. I can't describe it. I think, you know, the angels are music, and they guard me and they wake me up, and they say to me, you better keep going. We are giving you life today. I hear songs in my head that I'm even afraid to sing. because they're so beautiful and they're so humbling and so majestic. And, you know, until recently, that fear was something that was ruling me. And now I'm so proud to say, look, yes, God, thank you for speaking to me through music, because I am music because of you. This is a gift that's coming from you, and I am going to live it the way I want to live it. So in describing who I am music, I am art, and I am love, and I am community. I want people out there to understand the importance that they are creations of love. They are creatures of love. There is no one walking around this planet Earth that is born of hate, born of bad luck. You know how we tend to bring misfortune upon ourselves. I want my music to inspire people emotionally, evoke some form of power, some form of, you know, reminder that your purpose is bigger than what you see standing in front of you. The eye is very deceptive. Mm-hmm. That's why your heart is supposed to rule you the most. So, yeah, in describing me, I am music, I am art, I am love, you know.
When did you discover that music was, you know, at what age or at what stage of your life did you know that music was your purpose?
When I was 4 or 5 and we were watching television and I sang to in every music, like the title sequence when the show is starting, I'm singing. When I'm eating, I'm singing. When the music comes on, I'm singing or dancing. When I'm in the loo, I'm singing. When I'm taking a bath, I'm singing. Mm-hmm. And my kids do it now as well. My 16-year-old is a beautiful vocalist. My 8-year-old sings to everything. My 6-month-old baby has now started this weird high-pitched voice that I thought she was crying at first, but she's singing now. So, it just happens. And for me, to realize, oh my God, I love music, was when my older brother and my mom would scold me and say, but you, everything you know, there's no song that you don't understand. There's no song that doesn't move you. And then I got to primary school and I had the option of learning music and taking music class and playing musical instruments. Then it goes to high school and then you get to tertiary. And yes, I did, you know, your conventional schooling. I'm a double degree holder. But man, the music is haunting. Your passion haunts you. It really does.
Yeah. What are your degrees in?
I have a double degree in Bachelor of Arts. Mm-hmm. My first one is International Studies, which is like political sciences. And then the second one is Communications Media Studies. Mm-hmm. So I am my parents didn't even understand that until I said, do you see a news bulletin? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, right. I studied the items that go on a news bulletin. So current affairs, politics, you know, sports, culture, arts, all that. That's me.
And how has that influenced your music? Why didn't you take a music degree?
Alba, this is Africa.
Explain.
Unfortunately, we are still living in a time where people believe that music is not a real career and it does not pay bills. And I wish I had stuck to my guns and actually just followed through with it. And I know it's not too late because I do want a PhD in music. Mm-hmm. But I just thought, you know, our government in Botswana takes us to tertiary, you know. So music wasn't one of the options or the courses I could take to get government sponsorship. Yeah, so I took those two. And I am so grateful because I am a smart artist. I am quite the intellect. I am not boasting as such. I'm just, you know, acknowledging myself. It helps when you want to talk and write music about current issues, about activism, about pain, about empowerment, about justice, about crime, you know, about what is right and what is wrong, because you have an in-depth understanding of what you are talking about. It gives you the skills also of addressing people.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to learn public relations skills. I got to learn marketing strategy and research. I got to learn communication. You know, I got to learn how to prepare my own admin.
Okay.
Because not every artist is lucky enough to understand that they need to develop their art and grow into it and use brand communication and stuff like that. So, you know, going to varsity helped me, and the courses that I took did also, you know, they're working for me.
Yeah, because obviously there's the art side, but there's also always the business side,
which is
very, very important. So, you know, you've talked about obviously the intellect, everything. What, tell me, how do you create a piece of music? Like from the beginning, what is it? Does something catch your attention on TV, or you've read something in the newspaper, or what happens? How do you generate the ideas, and how do you then work with your creative director and your band to give us the final music?
Well, it's usually a feeling or a word that I hear, and then there's a harmony that comes with it. Like today's song, I was talking to a fellow artist who when he picks up the guitar, words just flow from his mouth. You know, those kind of naturally talented people.
Yeah.
And I was telling him about the second project, you know, and the theme of it being love and being divine love. And as soon as I was talking to him, I found myself saying, I want to write a song for us, and I want us to work on it. And the words that came to my head were heal. And then the melody that just came immediately was like, I hope I can sing it. It's like, heal, let me heal, let me heal. So it just happens like that, and then it just keeps looping and looping in my mind, and then as the time goes and the day goes, I'll think of a word, and then once I have about four lines, I run to my phone and put it on the sound recorder so I don't forget it, and then I send it to the guys. Then we talk about what instruments, the tempo, what's the feel.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want drum and bass? Do we want, you know, strings to go to it and stuff like that? And then it just grows.
So literally, you, as you said, you get like four lines, you sing it as a voice note, and then from then on, it becomes a collaborative effort.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and then it's back and forth. Sometimes it really doesn't take me that long. If I go into a studio and I'm feeling it, I can write a song in 5 minutes, and then after an hour, like Love Doctor, that's how Love Doctor was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think the words that came were Love Doctor, right?
Yeah.
In the morning, and then after an hour, I said to Lex, I think it's time to go to the studio. And then Sunday, we got the band together. And I said to them, we want to dub it up, guys. We want to dub it up and get a groove with it. And then the drummer went on it. And then it was just fire after that. So it depends. But yes, honestly, it's usually a feeling or a word.
Okay. Okay. And talking about, like, how long have you been working with your band?
Well, I've known Lex, I'd say maybe... Jesus, I'd say maybe almost 10 years,
mm-hmm.
but working with him, we've worked together for two. He contacted me beginning of last year, and he was like, yo, sis, man, you know what? I'm finding a position to make sure that you get a project out, so let's work on a project.
Oh,
and
wow.
We just started working, and then he got the guys together, and we worked so beautifully. I mean, without Lex, honestly, I wouldn't be where I am.
Yeah.
Honestly. No, I wouldn't be talking to you guys.
Well, I mean, you know, every artist always needs somebody, you know, like a support system. because you know, you focus on creating, but there's, you always need a support system, be it one person or 10 people, whatever it is, that kind of help you move forward. If not, it's just too much work for one person.
Yep, it is. It is. I don't even know how people can sit there and write 20 songs. I mean, for me, this next album, we are going for 10. At first, they were like 18. I was like, nah.
Wow.
You know? So we're going for 10, 12 songs this time. And even that is intimidating. But teamwork sees it through.
Tell me, what music do you listen to? What musicians are you inspired by, you know, or even for leisure? What do you listen to?
Oh, immediately Sade. Sade, man. Everything Sade.
Oh, really?
That woman. Oh, my God. Oh, since I was, you know, in my mother's womb, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sade. Oh, she's amazing. Sade, you know, Jill Scott.
Yes.
I love me some Jill Scott.
Yes.
I love Umsaki. She has that tone. Oh, Womack and Womack.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm vibing to a lot of Travis Green, a lot of Elevation Worship. You know, I'm going through a spiritual thing where, you know, I'm elevating and I'm maturing,
mm-hmm.
and I'm becoming closer to God. So I'm surrounding myself with, you know, praises. And that's what I'm on. I'm on a lot of Dante Bowie. I'm on a lot of, Elevation Worship. Locally, I'd say my friend Ketin Tangase, beautiful soul sister, the woman that I'd love to say she taught me how to sing, how to perform, how to stand in front of a stage.
Mm-hmm.
She's such a beautiful queen. And, you know, I have a lot of vocalists for friends, so I don't really need to, like, buy music as such. I just wait for them to, like, my friend, listen to this song.
Okay.
You know, then I download it, then I vibe all their stuff, yeah. But right now, since I've been in confinement, I've been tuning in a lot with a lot of spiritual stuff and connecting with the godly, basically.
Mm.
But I'm a hip-hop head, too. I love me my hip-hop. I love me my dance music, house music.
So basically, you have eclectic tastes in music. It's like,
yeah,
something
I'm
of
quite
everything.
Sporadic. Whatever sounds good, I roll with it.
Yeah. What's like the dominant music in Botswana?
Ooh, child, why did you have to ask me that question?
No, the reason I ask is because I want to lead it into the thing of how artists, particularly in Africa, how people make money from their art. I mean, for instance, here in Ghana, we have a musical genre called hip life. And literally, that is like, that and gospel music are literally like the two dominant musical genres there are. And so the thing is, I wanted to know the kind of music that you do, how do I say this?
How prevalent is it?
Yes, I mean, because at the end of the day, you're an artist. You're driven by a passion, a strong belief, but also you need to feed yourself. And then you have a dominant music culture where this is what everybody's listening to. This is what is always on TV. This is what is always on the radio. How then do you navigate your way through that for your music to be heard?
Well, the dominant genre in Botswana and Southern Africa, I'd say basically is what they call house music. And obviously traditional music, mostly traditional music gets a lot of airplay,
mm-hmm.
On national television. And then comes in your hip-hop, local hip-hop, you know, South African hip-hop, and then international hip-hop. R&B as well, you
mm-hmm.
know, the soul music. For reggae, it's not that prevalent. I mean, there are one or two radio shows that say reggae, but people are still very tentative towards reggae.
Why is that?
I think they just think. Sorry?
Why do you think that is? Because reggae is amazing music.
Reggae is the gospel. I think people just don't understand it, and they just assume that everybody's getting high off ganja, so they don't want to listen to it. But what's happening now is it's crossing over into the gospel realm. It's crossing over into the commercial realm. And the thing is, it's not even crossing over. Reggae is such an old genre. It's always been there.
Yes.
Yeah, it's always been there. It's your also just that, you know, African Caribbean sound. So it's just about, you know, pushing through the misconceptions about it and trying to get as much airplay. I honestly, when it comes to my own stuff, I just go international. I go online. I go virtual because I know it's more acceptable than within home, and it's a sad thing to say. Mm-hmm. And then maybe when local stuff, I can, you know, dabble into the house or the hip hop, sing a hook here and there. You know, I mean, I started with hip hop when I was 13, 14. I jumped on a dude's, you know, verse, and then I became the hook chick for some years. So I'm actually known more for, you know, being around the hip hop circles than the reggae circles. And then reggae is just the past 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Because I was in a reggae band and we did reggae shows and they were quite massive. And I'm bringing it back. I mean, I want to say there's a lot of reggae artists that are active, but they do what I'm doing. They go outside, unfortunately. But the tide has to change, and it's going to change with us. You know? Yeah, it's going to change with us. Reggae is healing, and reggae is for everybody.
Because the thing is, and I think exactly the same thing that you're talking about that happens in Botswana, I think it happens across the continent. You produce something that you feel would be beneficial to your society, will be good, and yet because society is not, it's not within the things that are acceptable within society at the moment, it's a pity that it always has to have outside approval before it can be accepted by our own people. That's problematic.
Yeah, a prophet is never loved in their hometown, right?
Yikes, yes. 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 Do you make a living from this, or do you have to do other things?
I have to do other things.
Yeah.
I have to do other things. It comes and goes. I mean, I have, you know, the sessions overnight that I partner up with the sound and the venue, and you know, a little bit goes into the kitty, but not enough.
Yeah.
So I have to do other things, you know, like I'm saying, the parents are only just coming around to it, but still, I at the end of the day, I have to send out CVs and say, yes, I'm a graduate and I'm a DJ and I can do run your office. And yeah, because the children have to eat.
Yes, of course.
Because this is a passion that can actually feed me. And this is why a lot of people like me end up leaving their home countries and moving to places like France or Reunion Island or even
Netherlands.
You know, like other countries, you know. And it's sad because you want to give back to your country. I was born here.
Yes.
I don't hate the place.
Of course.
But if it's not, you know, good for me, and it's, then I have no choice. If Germany is an option, why not go to Germany and push my passion and, you know, raise my kids and be happy, kind of thing, you know.
I mean, we have an amazing singer here in Ghana. Her name is Wiala, and she's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
But it feels like she gets a lot more recognition abroad. And so, obviously, she has to take her trade there because that's where, you know, she gets the love, and that's where her bills also get paid, you know. So I totally understand you, especially... You have children. You have a newborn at 6 months. You have to think about, you know, their survival and what's best for them.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, I don't know if it happens with you guys, but local artists get paid less than international artists. It sounds like, of course, I mean, they're not international, they're local, but really, come on.
You know? Yeah.
You know that debate. Like, we need to pay local artists what they are worth, you know, because they are just as worthy as the person that you're bringing from outside. And that system needs to stop. You know?
Well, I also think it also comes to the point of how the arts are valued on our continent within our various countries. Yeah. How important we feel the arts are to the growth of society, to the growth of people. Abroad and places like that, they understand music. It's a money-making machine. It's a whole industry.
Yeah.
There's a thing, maybe even not about Americans or maybe Europeans, where whatever the situation is, they know how to turn it around and make money from it. Whatever it is, somebody will find a way to make money out of it. There's nothing that goes to waste. Nothing that is like, oh, this is useless. They're always going to find a way. I mean, take Zoom, for instance. We've done interviews on Zoom, but the pandemic came and somebody sat there and thought, okay, how am I going to make money from this? And before you know it, it became like the biggest mode of communication across borders and across globes and everything. And I'm sure these people made a gazillion out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to learn that there's a formula to everything, which is why developing yourself as an artist and understanding the business of being an artist is important.
Yeah,
it's not just talent alone.
Yes.
You know, some people do like a strike it lucky and base it on their talents and they become popular. But take YouTube. We are all on YouTube, but we all don't have a million followers. Exactly. Why is that? You know?
Yeah.
So it takes about time, content, creativity, commitment, aggressive marketing, and intense presence.
Yes.
That's why the other people are making it and the others are not making it.
And then, as you said, obviously there are people who have millions and millions of followers, and then there's somebody struggling to make 100 followers. But there's like there's an awful lot of work. Literally, like I have a TV show, and I have an Instagram page for that TV show, and just putting content onto that page is literally like a full-time job that you're not getting paid for.
Yeah.
It's just like,
exactly,
you know,
exactly. You don't sleep. You know, everything has to have relevance.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Exactly. You know what? Let's cool down and take a musical break. Blood, Guns, and Revolution. Tell us a bit about this track.
Oh, I wish I wrote it, first of all. Mstaki is a beautiful, beautiful soul. I aspire, hopefully, to write a song with her.
Uh-huh.
And this is the song that I listen to that reminds me why I am where I am, and what it is that I need to do, and what it is that I'm living for.
Mm-hmm.
She captures our history in such a beautiful way that humbles you and evokes you to wake up and not only climb, but, you know, because not everybody has vision in their life. And it should be an anthem to everybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You guys will hear it. It's amazing. I can...
Okay, let's have a listen to it right now, and then we will get back onto the show.
but
four vultures more trivans, and whose hands of blood? Fill the skies, but to believe how big-bellied politicians mutter about how you'll be remembered. Street names echo your fame, misused freedom songs your names. Your blood trickles down broken drains, sometimes in vain. You see, the cush of your youth was blood, guns, and revolutions. Bullets in the air now, tear gas in your hearts. You see, the kush of your youth was blood, guns, and revolutions. Fists in the air now, tear gas in your hearts. Oh. Nothing still, although museums are filled with stories of your ill-rewarded heroic deeds. The gaze of the martyrs falls heavy on our wills, thick in the throes of youthful self-inflicted guilt. You see, the kush of your youth was blood, guns, and revolutions. Bullets in the air now, tear gas in your heart. You see, the kush of your youth was blood, guns, and revolutions. Fists in the air now, tear gas in your heart. Oh yeah, mama, hey baba, baleva, oh oh. Your calloused hands for a share in your own land. Your blood flooded the foothill onto wealthy hands. The gaze of the sons and daughters falls heavy with bloody questions, thick in the lies of allies bound by miners' blood. You see, the kush of your youth was blood, guns, and revolutions. Bullets in the air now, and tear gas in our hearts. You see the kush of our youth, still blood, guns, and revolutions. Bullets in your backs now, questions in our hearts. Oh, balega baba, balega baba, dancing melo yen. Oh,
wow, Maya, that is an amazing song. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely. I'm really going to check out her music because it is, oh wow, it just transports you somewhere. It's really amazing. Thank
right?
you. Thank you for bringing this song to us. And funnily enough, while we were at the musical break, my technician, my behind the scenes guy, AB, and I were talking and we're like, that we get a really beautiful, genuine vibe from you. Like, I think it's unusual that you... It's unusual that you meet people who genuinely follow what it is that they believe in. Because listen, you have degrees in other stuff. Somebody along the line will say, hey, you know what? I've got kids, I've got responsibilities. Let me use my degrees and get me a job somewhere that pays me reasonably well or pays me really well, and I can have like a comfortable life. But the fact that there's a belief that you have, something that is very strong within you, and the fact that you pursue that regardless of what there is, I think is very, very special. It's a very brave thing to do.
Hi, Amy. Love you guys.
I think it's incredibly, incredibly courageous.
And we
need more examples of that. You know, somebody who just wants to put love in the world and that's it. It's a very simple, but it's a very complex thing to do. I'm listening to you.
I think surviving pain is something, it'll do that to you. It'll do that to you. I mean, I've had jobs, but it just, you know, I don't know. They were not fulfilling. There was just nothing that gave me any peace about it. And also in a spiritual term, something would just happen, you know? I'd find myself going, you see, I'm going to go to the stage. I'm going to go make a poetry show. This high heel thing, you know? You know, and I do have that typical corporate face. I could wear the corporate and the wigs and do the nails and speak bank, you know, or whatever. That wouldn't be me. And I'm 37 now. I can't be living for people. What example am I leaving for my children? And how am I making my parents proud by doing what they wanted instead of sticking to my guns, you know?
Yeah. But I suppose the whole thing is with the parents thing, it's always from a place of worry, isn't it? A place of worry and care that, is this thing going to sustain?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
and it drives me because it's not like a rebellious stance that I'm taking.
Yeah.
It's a stance of, you birthed me, you influenced these gifts, and now here you go. Here's my thank you to you to say, look, I can be a representative of this bloodline and save lives at the same time.
Yeah.
Not a conventional way of doing it, but it will get the job done.
Exactly.
And they come around. I don't want to lie. They come around. And I'm so honored for that.
But I also think part of the fear is when a parent sees themselves reflected in you, I think there's also a level of fear because they also know what they went through, they're always coming from a place of protection and care and worry. So, but you know, it gets to a point where they're proud. So your second album is going to come out by the end of the year, right?
No pressure, Alba. Wow. Yes. No. I think we're going to take it easy with this one. Possibly the first two singles, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to give people something the year mustn't pass by without anything new coming out.
Yeah.
So one or two singles from the album, but we'll probably launch it next year, June.
Okay.
If not May.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has the COVID situation in Botswana calmed down enough for you to do live performances?
Yes, we are exactly. What's the date today?
Today.
What's the date?
Yeah.
We are good. Maybe I don't know, state of emergency ended on the 30th of September.
Okay.
So basically,
it's a couple of days.
A couple of days ago, yes. Mm. So basically, the gates have opened with restrictions here and there, but live shows, yes, we are able to have live shows. Mm-hmm. There's no limit on people as yet, but we are able to have performances, and I'm actually trying to get into one or two venues,
mm-hmm.
And hopefully that will pick up, given that there's the festive season that's coming up.
Yeah. Tell me, how does that when you, I always come back to this, and because obviously art needs to feed people. So basically, you approach a venue and you have a discussion with them, and then what happens?
Yeah.
And then what, do they take a percentage of proceeds, or how does that work?
Well, because I'm an designer, it's something that have the blessed luck of the venue owner saying, you know what, I know you can draw people in, so here's my venue, and you can choose a day that you can attract people. So for me, it's usually a Tuesday, a Thursday, or a Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and then I have an open mic. Open mics are friendly and they're not intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a weird number as an entrance. So I'd say maybe like $7 and a care gift. Or, yeah, like, you know, or $10 and a packet of pads to give away.
Uh-huh.
Or $25 as an alternative. Yeah.
Okay.
So that attracts people. And usually it's like cafe venues.
Yes.
So you don't want to antagonize the patrons that have been being there. You want them to get used to the activity. And having open mic instead of karaoke allows for artists to bring their poetry, to bring their acoustic music, to mm-hmm. bring their comedy, to
okay.
bring their magic tricks. You know, you discover so much talent by just giving a platform. That's the mantra for the sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also semi-acoustic sessions where I will have maybe a DJ and a bass player.
Mm-hmm.
And put your, sorry, could you hold on?
Yes,
baby wants to move away.
Baby was
so
like...
I'd have a... She would dream. She's like, I've been to those.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, then I'd have a semi-acoustic session where I'd prepare a 30-minute set, and I'd have a DJ, a bass player, and a percussionist.
Okay.
And then just jam for 30 minutes, and then we play rare music, like, you know, Putumayo world music. We don't want to play music that the person would hear, so it would be a theme night, like Fela Kuti night, and you just say Fela Kuti music. Here and there, have one or two showcases. Yeah, so that's the kind of small intimate setups that I do. And then in terms of proceedings, maybe I'll get a tab and then an offer to cover the sound equipment and a little something for me to take home.
Nice.
From the venue owner,
nice.
Depending on who I partner up with, yeah.
But that's fantastic, because it's always nice to have different forms of entertainment and, you know, entertainment that's also intellectual. Sometimes, you know, more and more is becoming a little harder to get that kind of stuff. So, Maya, where do you see yourself artistically in, let's say, 5 years' time? Where do you believe?
5 years' time, I have a media empire. I've got 4 bands that are touring all over the world. And I'm living on an island off the coast of Reunion Islands, just living my best life. It's super long.
Excuse my ignorance. Where are the Union Islands?
Reunion Islands are just off the edge of Madagascar.
They're
part of the African continent, but just below. They're really, really small, but they're just beautiful and full of culture. The people there are, it's a mix of black, white, Indian, Asian.
Yes.
And
like Madagascar, in a way.
Yes, like Madagascar, but and they speak French.
Yeah.
That's the dominant language.
Do you speak French?
So for me, that's my dream place.
Mm.
I I did French in high school for 2 years, so I can you know,
muggle your way
I can,
through
yeah,
it.
Yeah, a little bit through it. And thank God to technology. There's an app on my phone that I'm practicing because I want to go there for vacation next year.
Okay.
So, to
start building the foundation of the.
Yes. Yeah, we must travel. We must know the world. So me in 5 years is a media mogul, super amazing community leader woman.
That's a journey. That's an amazing journey.
Yeah. but wish me luck.
No, definitely, for sure. And also, you know, you've got an aim where exactly you don't put caps on yourself as to what is possible. You know, if you believe it, yeah. So imagine take our society, there's music that is, for want of a better phrase, one way. There's music that all seem to sound the same as each other. There's somebody tuned in and they're doing music with a purpose. Music that's very distinctive from the run of the mill. What advice would you give them about moving forward with it or even starting it?
Stick to your guns. Stick to what maintains the essence of you, because the more authentic you sound, the more unique that you stand out. You go with the crowd, you get lost in it. So stick to your guns, empower yourself, educate yourself, read as much as you can on it. And it's important that you learn your craft, because in you being unique, you're becoming a leader yourself. So you are going to get followers. Mm-hmm. And you need to learn how to educate other people. So yeah, that's what I would say. Don't give up. Do you stick to your guns. It will pay off.
Brilliant. Finally, give us your social media. Where can people go and stream your music or see videos or, you know, buy your music? Where?
Well, the Warrior EP is available exclusively on Bandcamp. So you go onto bandcamp.com and then you search Another Tuesday. That is the concept store that the project is being sold. Or you can search my name, Maya Rose, mm-hmm. R-O-Z-E. Mm-hmm. And then my socials, I am on Facebook. Mm-hmm. My page is Maya Azia Rose Sings, which is Mars the Warrior. So it's M-A-R-S the Warrior. Mm-hmm. And then my personal profile, Maya Azia Rose. So, and then you see my awesome little cheeky face.
Okay. And so basically we have to wait to the middle of the year before we hear your next album, you're telling us.
The next album, yes, next year, 2022, but the first single should be out before the end of the year, God willing.
Okay.
In the meantime, you can check out the acoustic version of Portrain on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, you just type Maya Azia Rose. Or a Naked Soul Digigroove. That is Naked Soul Digigroove.
Uh-huh.
And then you'll see the acoustic version if you want to see the latest video of the Warrior EP.
Uh-huh. So
otherwise, just go to Bandcamp and sorry, yeah.
I was just wondering,
yes, ma'am.
Why are you not on places like Spotify and all of those streaming giants?
Because it was a debut album, we wanted to see if we can generate a working formula and also just have a following so that we teach them the sound and we also harness our authentic reggae sound. Because my sound is Afro reggae dub rhythm, right? Mm-hmm. So we are still trying to capture the essence of the sound. And then that's when we can now start dabbling bravely into other platforms. We just want to get the niche first.
Okay.
And then once that gains traction, we can go on to other platforms. And also, I'm just a one-woman show right now. The team is totally creative. So I'm still trying to learn on how to manage the social media networks,
mm-hmm.
In harnessing the brand and separating the personal mm-hmm. from the music. Yeah, it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah. Definitely. I wish you lots and lots and lots and lots of luck with that. And no doubt it will happen because you approach it with purity.
Oh, blessed Alva. Thank you so much. You know what? You guys are my family. I should just move there, actually.
Okay.
And just get married to AB's brother. AB, you have a brother there. Tell him to bring cows here.
How many cows do you need?
30.
30 cows. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, AB, let's see time frame. Can we gather the third? Let's even make it 35 cows. She's worth it.
Yes.
You know, we don't worry. We will talk to our elders and gather the fattened cows to come and and do what is right.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
AB is just like killing himself with laughter here. Like, where are we going to buy 35 cows? How much is one cow at the moment in Ghana?
Wow. 4,000.
4,000.
So the best is like 4,000. Yeah. So 10 is 40,000. 30 is 120,000. Add 5 to it. 140, like 150,000, mm-hmm. which can buy which can buy a small house somewhere. Small.
Yeah, you see, spare change. Ah, guys,
so in Botswana, people are still bringing cows.
Absolutely. You don't get married without cows. Like, that's like why wow. what do you expect here?
And
the lobola.
Okay, and the average price for a lobola is how many cows?
Mama, I'm asking my mom.
Okay. So that we can negotiate.
I'm asking her, so how much is typical lobola? How much? How many cows? 10.
10.
10 cows.
Adamaya, your own is special. Though, if we are doing 35, we could get 3 average wives for AB's brother.
She says, princess. I'm a princess. That's why I'm
fit. Oh, please. Sorry, mama. Your princess. This is so funny. This is so funny. But don't worry, we'll find the 35 cows and we'll come bearing gifts. So, Maya, thank you.
I believe you.
Thank you so very much for taking the time to join us and for your little one putting up with us taking her mommy away from her for like this nearly an hour. Thank you so much for sharing your music and your belief system with us. I think it's very important for people to hear that you can be in this day and age, you can be honest in your beliefs. Did you hear me? Hello, Maya, did you hear me? Oh, you're breaking up again. Yeah, the network.
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Oh, the network is very, very bad.
Hello, Ghana.
Hello. Hello, Maya.
But send her a message.
She's off. Okay, so can I end it?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Hi.
I don't know what happened.
Yes, the network went on. I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking the time to join us and to share your art with us and to share you know, what drives your work, the fact that it comes from a very sort of a very clean place.
Thank you guys,
we really really appreciate that. And it looks like the young one is saying to us, guys, this interview should be over because I need my mommy to focus on me. So we're going to listen to her. Maya, thank you so very much. We're going to follow your music. And I'm also going to start following you on Facebook as well to see what amazing things that you're going to come up with in the future. Thank you very much.
Much appreciated, Albert. Thank you, guys. Thank you to your team. Thank you, Arts Africa. Thank you, Africa Global Radio.
Okay.
Without you guys, honestly, I don't know. You made my day. Like,
excellent. It's good to know that we brought some joy all the way there in to Botswana. Have a great day.
Yes.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, thank you, you guys. Enjoy your afternoon.
Thank you.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
He's been dying to say something.
Ah, finally said it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, that's so cute. Bye. Okay, so that was a great conversation that we had with Maya. I just love the beautiful place that she comes from. It's wonderful. It's, you meet people like that and it makes you feel good. And AB's family are going to get the 35 cows ready so that we can go and claim Princess Maya. Thank you all for tuning in. It's been really enlightening. Check out her work on Facebook, and also check out, just listen to her music. You heard a little bit of it now. It was absolutely amazing. So we started the show with a proverb: a bag of locusts is better carried by many people. Sorry, I forgot to ask her to pronounce it for me in her language, but another time will come. Africa needs to unite. We need to appreciate ourselves and find solutions to our own problems. We need to create our own media. We need to do us. A big thank you again to AB for all his hard work behind the scenes. Check us out on africaglobalradio.com, Instagram and Twitter, AF Global Radio, Facebook at Africa Global Radio. And of course, you can send us a WhatsApp on +233 207 06 4680. Arts Africa is brought to you by Africa Global Radio. My name is Alba K. Suprim, and I am the host of the Arts Africa show on Africa Global Radio. And we are signing out with our last track from Maya. It's called Porch Rain. Have a wonderful weekend, people. Thank you for tuning in again. And let the week be productive and fulfilling. And let's meet here again next Saturday at 12 p.m. on the Arts Africa show. Thank you.
Send for my love, doctor. Sending my love so sick. Temperature rises, kiss. Got me my fever fist. Send for my love, doctor. Sending my love so sick. Temperature rises, kiss. Got me my fever fist. Close to my soul, I got love for two. Should you know?